Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Good morning and welcome to this edition of Atlanta Business Radio, powered by Business Radio X. I'm your host, Alex Gossett-Shiflett, and we have three very special guests in our studio today. But before we get started, make sure you are connected with us on social media, Twitter at Business Radio X. Also, today's show, Atlanta Business Radio, you can follow us at Atlanta Biz Radio, and you can connect with me personally on Twitter at Alex G. Shiflett. We'd love to hear from you, and you can check out the pictures on our site from our studio. Okay, I've got three great guests in the studio today. Our first guest is Leslie Hale for Books for Keep. Leslie Hale began work in June 2013 as the first ever executive director of Books for Keep. Welcome to the show, Leslie.
Thank you so much, Alex.
Our second guest is Christophe. Help me out.
Le Métayer. Yes.
Oh, good. And Christophe has been pursuing his passion for good food and elegant cuisine for 3 decades. Wow. Welcome, Christophe.
Thank you.
And our third guest is Jessica Park, and she is the catering and sales director for
Christophe's to go.
Okay, I'm going to start with Leslie. Leslie, tell us about Books for Keep.
Books for Keeps started in 2009 as just a grassroots effort to get books into the hands of children who otherwise have no access to books outside of the regular school year and school day. And it started because our founder, Melanie Smith, met a little girl who was not looking forward to summer because she had no books of her own. And Melanie thought, okay, I want to help this little girl. And along the way, learned that it's a very widespread problem, children not having access to books, and learned that there's actually a lot of research into some pretty simple solutions to it. And really, it's just giving kids access to books. So our program invites children in the schools that we serve to come just at the end of the school year and pick out 12 books each to take home and to keep forever. And we're in 10 elementary schools now doing that.
Wow. Wow. And so tell me again how you started.
When our founder met a little girl who just wasn't looking forward to summer because she didn't have any books of her own. And Melanie, our founder, put out the call over Facebook, over social media, over book swapping websites saying, help, I just need donated books. And books started pouring in from all over the country to help. And now, fast forward about 6 years, we are purchasing the majority of our books. We have individuals providing donations. We do grants in order to purchase a lot of the books that we're giving away to children. But our costs are still only about $30 a child. And the research that we're based around actually shows an impact of that model, that method, that's similar to those children attending summer school, but at a fraction of the cost. It can cost $1,000, upwards of $1,000 to send a child to summer school, and just $30 to place high quality, new and like new books in their hands.
Wow. Okay. Let me get this straight. You are funded by donations and grants.
Correct. Yes, we're a nonprofit.
Okay, nonprofit. Okay, and why give 12 books to each child?
Yeah, that's a great question. There's 30 years worth of research that shows the impacts of children not having books during the school year. Outside the school year, during summer. What happens when they aren't reading? And the fact that children from low-income families are particularly at risk. There was a study out of the University of Florida that spent 3 years, basically 3 summers, giving children access to books and following what happened. And they had really built off of that 30 years worth of research to come to that number, that 12 books, and found that to be sort of the critical tipping point for children. The dividing line between falling backwards or really sort of staying right where they were from the end of the school year and advancing forward during the summer. So 12 books was landed on as the right number to help those children actually gain reading skills, literacy skills during the summer.
And what age group are we talking about?
K through five, kindergarten through fifth grade is our main program that we do work with middle schools and high schools to get books into the media specialist, the librarian's hands to then get to their students. But elementary school is that really, really critical age. There's a lot of research out of the Annie Casey Foundation and a lot of other national sort of think tanks, policy centers that show that third grade reading is kind of that critical dividing line. Having students on grade level reading at sort of the really level that they should be by third grade is really, really important, because third grade is when they make the switch from learning to read to reading to learn. You think about it, by the middle of elementary school, children need those basic literacy skills in order to be able to dissect a social studies textbook, in order to be able to understand a complex math equation or problem, you know, word problem that's being put in front of them. So elementary school is kind of that critical point at which we have to not only get them on grade level, but show them that reading can be fun, that reading isn't just a chore. It isn't something that they just have to do for school, that it can actually be pleasurable. And if they make that connection with reading as a pleasurable activity, they find books that they're interested in, that can carry them through the rest of their school careers.
Yeah, and you're right. I mean, at third grade, you're building a foundation.
Yes.
Because if, you know, if they get lost there, then it's middle school is going to be that much harder and they're just going to continue to fall behind.
Exactly. Exactly. I mentioned the Annie Casey Foundation studies. They've been studying, you know, the longitudinal impacts of literacy scores for many, many years. And one of the big things that they point out is that a child who's not reading on grade level by the third grade is four times less likely than his or her peers to graduate from high school.
Mm, wow. So what are some, give me some titles, some of the popular books that work well with the kids.
Diary of a Wimpy Kid is one of our most requested.
Yes.
Captain Underpants.
Yes.
Which it's, you know, Captain Underpants, I like to tell people, is actually one of the most banned books from elementary school libraries. It's not that there's anything inappropriate in it. It's not like it's Stephen King or something like that. It's just potty humor. It's elementary school potty humor. And a lot of adults might look at it as having no redeeming value. But, you know, if potty humor, if, you know, jokes about farts and, yeah, and other bodily functions get kids interested in reading, and it helps them sort of make that bridge to more complex texts, allows them to, you know, sit down and read John Steinbeck by the time that they're in high school, then awesome. Let them read Captain Underpants.
Read about farts. Go right ahead.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yes. And Diary of a Wimpy Kid, my kids love those books.
Yeah. And Jeff Kinney, that author, is still is putting out a new book each year. And
yeah,
so it's this highly anticipated book each year for the kids that we serve.
Wow.
A lot of other classics, you know, Goosebumps, Junie B. Jones, those are still really big. And then a lot of what's really in right now is graphic novels, because it kind of, again, it's that hybrid, that bridge between picture books and chapter books. But, you know, it often has some of the more complex plot points and vocabulary words, but it's got the pictures to kind of almost soften things for kids to make it seem more accessible as well.
And have you seen the new book by BJ Novak that there's no pictures in it? It's,
yes,
just words.
Yeah.
The fun of that is having someone read it with expression.
Yes.
Are you familiar with that?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yeah. That was really exciting when that came out, because it's helping sort of reshape the way that people think about books and why kids get interested in books, and that it doesn't necessarily have to have pictures. Yeah.
Right. Right. And so you're expanding. Is,
yes,
that correct?
Yes, we are. We are currently serving 10 elementary schools, as I said. The majority are in Athens because that's where our program started. It's where we are based. But we serve one school in Warrenton in rural Georgia and one school in Atlanta, Dunbar Elementary School. We are getting ready to expand to 5 additional Atlanta schools, as well as the rest of Athens public elementary schools that we are not yet in, and 3 new rural schools. So we're adding 15 schools over the next 3 years. Folks in Athens know us really well because it's our home base, but we're trying to reach more students in other parts of the state. We're trying to reach more students in Metro Atlanta, in those high-need schools, in the schools where 90% or more students qualify for free or reduced-price lunch. So we're going where the need is, and we're trying to reach more sort of corners of the community so that folks know about our program, so that we can make those connections with people who, you know, want to volunteer and help us give the books away in the schools, who want to donate $30 to sponsor a child in our program. There are a lot of ways that folks can get involved, and you know, we're just looking to make those connections so that we can reach more kids with more books.
And do the kids get to take the books home, like when they get them? Are they theirs?
Yes.
Or is there a swap, or how does that work?
That's critical that they get to take them home. That's why we're called Books for Keeps. These are their books to keep. They don't have to bring them back. A lot of them establish, you know, almost a mini library in their home that their younger siblings can then access as they grow. And they can share those books. They can model reading with their younger siblings, which is really, really important for adults and for older siblings to model reading as a pleasurable activity, as something that, you know, this is an important thing that we do in our home. It's also important that those children have that sense of ownership, that those books are truly theirs, because when something is truly yours, you take better care of it. And it also means that there's not that fear of what happens when you lose a book or it gets damaged. There isn't a replacement cost that these families have to face, which can be a really huge barrier for some families in accessing the public library when a child maybe in the past has lost a book. Mm. And a family that's living paycheck to paycheck is going to have a lot of trouble paying off that lost book fee.
You're right.
Yeah.
That's a good point. So, Leslie, tell our audience, our listeners, how they can get in touch with you and how they can help with Books for Keep.
Booksforkeeps.org, www.booksforkeeps.org. Folks can learn a lot more about our program. My contact information is there. People can read about, you know, how to become a sponsor, how to sponsor a child, how to donate books. We do have one location in Mechanicsville, just south of downtown, that accepts donated books for us. It's right next to Dunbar Elementary, which is our one service school in Atlanta. You know, if businesses are interested in becoming a drop-off site, let's say you're a business that, you know, occasionally does business in Athens, and, you know, if folks dropped off a couple of boxes of books, you could bring those books over to Athens when you've got enough to bring. We're looking for other businesses that can serve as drop-off sites in Atlanta as well. And then, of course, volunteers who want to help us give books away in the schools, because as I describe it, it is truly the holy grail of volunteering. When you think about volunteering, what are you hoping to get out of it? Those warm fuzzies, right? That feeling of having helped the people that you're benefiting and getting to see their faces and the joy of receiving the thing that you're helping them with. And that's what our book distributions are. You get to actually see the joy on the faces of the kids that we're serving. And they're getting excited about something as simple as books. That's really beautiful.
And it just occurred to me while you were saying that, my kids are 15 now. We have boxes of books. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. that they don't use anymore, which are just sitting collecting dust.
Yeah, we want your old Captain Underpants.
Yes.
that's exactly how our program started, and we still take donated books. You know, our priority, of course, is gently used children's books, but we take books of all kinds because we have a book sale in August of every year where we take all those books that are not right for our program, whether they are adult books, whether they are more than gently used children's books. Those go to our book sale and make more money for our program so that we can buy more of the books that are right.
Great. Well, thank you, Leslie. I appreciate that.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Okay. Now to Christoph. Christoph is the name of your catering business is?
We're Christoph's To Go.
Christoph's To
Yes.
Go. And this is Jessica that you're listening to. Jessica, you are the
catering sales director.
Catering sales director. Okay. Christoph, how did you get started and why did you become a chef?
Why I became a chef? Don't really know why I became a chef. It was no question.
He was hungry.
I was hungry probably and nothing else to do and never had anything else in mind to do except cooking.
So you knew that right away from
yes.
an early age that this is what you wanted
yeah.
to do.
I was in Ukraine. I joined the Ukraine school when I was 14, graduated when I was 16 and worked in the kitchen since.
Okay. And where did you train?
Train, I went to school in France and trained in many areas in France. Spent a year in the army, lived in Denmark, Monte Carlo, restaurant in France, and moved here in the United States.
Wow. Okay. Tell us a little bit about Christoph To Go.
And so Christoph To Go started in my apartment where I was selling food to my neighbors. From there, I moved because everybody loved the idea of the convenience of having food made and delivered to them. Move in a bigger kitchen and then in another bigger kitchen. And now we are in a 6,000 square foot kitchen that give us the opportunity to deliver the whole Atlanta, Metro Atlanta, and in the same time doing catering.
Okay. And you, at one time you were a chef at the Ritz-Carlton, is that
Yes,
correct?
I was in Buckhead. I spent over a year as a sous chef in a fine dining room and 4.5 years, 5 years in a cafe.
Okay. So tell us, like, walk us through a typical day for you.
Typical day. Most days starts kind of early bird and late bird in the same time. So I probably get up by 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. Not necessarily to go to work, but do think about my whole day. And when I finally got to breakfast, like for this morning, we had a delivery for breakfast by 6:30. And then it's to when everybody comes in the kitchen, it's to dispatch the what needs to be done to by everyone. Make sure that all the orders are in because we don't have any restaurants. So basically it's our website, it's our store, it's our front store. So we need to check that everybody, all the orders are in, that we have the appropriate amount of food in a cooler so we can cook everything. And if we have any other caterings, make sure that this happened too. And that keeps me busy for a good part of the day.
Okay, so tell me, and Jessica, you can jump in here. How does this work? If you don't have a restaurant, but you take orders online, how does that work?
Well, our kitchen is a 6,000 square foot commissary kitchen, and it's well equipped, really well thought out. Christoph designed it himself with his experience. It is, he can tell you a little bit more about it, but it has a U shape to it. So everything that we purchase comes in one end and then we do the preparing and it makes like a U shape and it goes out the other side. And the interest in that is that there's no worry of cross-contamination with food. Meats and vegetables can't cross each other's paths in the restaurant industry. We also, with our events, we can do catering for quite large groups because of the space and the facility that we have and the way that it's set up. We can do box lunches and we can put all the things together in one space separate while other people are cooking. So it's a really well thought out kitchen that is there. There's going to be a long time before we outgrow this space, I would say.
Okay, tell me, I'm still trying to understand. Tell me, like, what's your typical customer?
Anybody with a stomach? Is that what you say?
Yeah, anybody with a stomach. I mean, you can be busy for any reasons in the world. It's busy people. Our type customer that we want. So, you can be busy because you're a mom and your kids are going to school and you have to work and you have to do all the, help with their homework and all the extra activities. Or you can be, a single parent. You can be, basically, like I always describe, it's when you're coming out from school and start to work, you probably don't know how to cook. And you don't feel like
I don't know how to cook, actually.
And you don't want to spend time cooking. And after that, you get married and family grow and you are so busy. So, you don't have time to cook. So, we are here for that. And when you get to the point where you are empty nester, you don't feel like to cook for him and he doesn't want to eat your food. So we're here again.
My husband doesn't want to eat my food anyway.
So we have two sides to the business. We have the to-go side and we also have the catering side. And the to-go side is online. We have a menu that Christoph puts up each week and it changes each week whereby anyone, you can go online and see what our week's menu is and make your order online and then it'll be delivered to you at your home. If you are not home when it comes, we have coolers that we leave with ice packs in them so the food can be left at your house if you don't happen to be home when we deliver. And that is our to-go side. On the catering side, we really don't have very many limitations because Christoph's experience, he can really produce most any type of food, any various ethnicities, different, Mexican food. He can do really quite a lot of different things.
Okay, so you deliver the food. Now, this isn't a business like Fresh Start where they put all the ingredients in a box and send it to your home.
No.
This is actually already prepared.
Everything is fully prepared. Due to our having our storefronts first, we actually are able to put all of the nutrition facts on all of our boxes, all of our product, which is something that other people won't be able to do. He buys the ingredients. He picks the best stuff that is available to him through his purveyors. And he's got great relationships with all of his purveyors because he's been in the industry for so long, which in turn allows him to offer our clients good cost, like good pricing on our food. And really, you're having a former chef from the Ritz-Carlton prepare dinner for you in your home. I mean, honestly.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
So I could just go to your website. I could place an order. You would deliver a dinner already cooked?
Already cooked.
And all I have to do is open the box and maybe heat it up.
Yep. All you have to do is heat it up. It has all the preparation instructions on it. And none of them take probably more than 30 minutes to warm up in the oven. They're prepared like the morning that they are delivered. Nothing is ever frozen. I could go on.
Well, give me a typical dinner, or maybe what's your most popular dinner?
I order for my family every week.
You do?
I do. It's so easy. I mean, it's just one less thing to worry about. And honestly, if I went to the grocery store, I'm not sure that I could buy the ingredients that he has access to and prepare the same thing, even if I had the skills, which, to be honest, I don't. I wouldn't be able to prepare the things that he's able to at the same cost. And certainly the time is of great value as well, that you don't have to spend the time to do it yourself. But some of my favorite items, he's got a few items that are on the menu each week, like staples that your family will enjoy, like lasagna and chicken pot pie, shepherd's pie. I mean, just all kinds of different. It's not any one kind of food.
We try to cook for everyone, meaning that we have some staples, like Jessica just mentioned, because we try to, please families. So we have lasagna, we have chicken pot pie, these kind of staples. But in the same time, we try to be as healthy as possible, whatever that means, meaning that so everything is portion control. So if you have, we don't say that you are going to lose weight eating our food, but we think that a good way to control everything is that when the container is empty, you're done.
Yeah. I mean, you stop eating.
Exactly. Yeah, don't eat the container.
I wish you go to a second container, but but we cook a bit of it's America. I mean, everybody's from everywhere in the world. So we have on the menu, we have some Asian food, we have some French food, Italian, Latino food. I mean, we have a bit of everything. We try to be as pleasing as possible, knowing that we can't please everyone. But I would say we are kind of a multi-restaurant under one roof.
And I understand you recently did something with your retail store, something new. What was that?
So that was new with the retail store that we closed them.
Okay. What did we do?
we closed them for the reason is that it was the first store that we had. We had to fill them up with food, fresh food every day.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as any other retail, if you come in a store that is not fully, loaded,
yeah,
it's not very appealing. Mm. And it happened that we have way too much waste because we want to keep the highest quality as possible and freshness as possible. So it was, I would say, it wasn't efficient enough. Maybe because, I don't know if Atlanta was not necessarily ready for what we were offering, or if we didn't know how to express or show what we had in mind to do. So that's why we went back to a home delivery.
Yeah, we kind of simplified the model so that our overhead was less, and it seems to be working, and people don't have to drive to our retail store now to pick up the food. Now we can bring it to them. So it's actually a win-win for everybody.
It really is. I mean, when you think of the time going to the grocery store, getting all the ingredients, then going home. I mean, especially with, people working 40 hours a week, it's like a little slice of heaven, actually.
It is. It's one less thing to worry about. And that is kind of invaluable these days. We're so busy.
So what sets Christophe's to go apart from other companies or your competition? What makes you stand out?
Having been in the event industry as long as I have, I've seen with other catering companies, they often give you the same ideas for events. They'll give you the same shrimp and grits, macaroni and cheese, and just kind of basic ideas. They don't really come to the table with a lot of new and creative ideas. And I mean, that's not across the board, but we definitely enjoy customers that are familiar with food and have the language of what they want, because we can create all kinds of different food. And we also having the nutrition facts, like I mentioned earlier, that's a great value for us because we can put it on our box lunches for a corporate setting. And people want to know what they're eating. They want to be able to look at it and say, oh, this is whatever the ingredients.
And when you prepare box lunches for corporations, what's a typical meal for in a box?
First, you tell us what you want in the box. So most of the time, like any other lunch, I would say, company, we are going to have sandwiches and salads. And in the same time, we always offer, we put all our dressings on the sides. We never bother anything with mayonnaise or any dressings. So that's it, up to your liking. And we always have you give you the choice between fruits and other, fresh fruit and more indulging desserts. And that's it, up to you, not to us. We're not here to tell you what to eat. We know what is good. You are supposed to know what is good for you. So, we don't want to hear us telling you what's good and not good for you. We're not here for that. I don't think so.
What's the craziest thing that's happened with your business or the craziest order that you've had?
Oh, I don't know. It happened that we have to do 600 breakfast on
600
on a kind of very short time frame. That can sound not necessarily a big for anybody working in convention centers. It's a very, very minor order. Now in the kitchen we are only 5 people, so it's kind of plus. It was 600 breakfast plus the other things that we have to do in the same time. Craziest. I wish to see crazy things every day.
600 breakfasts. That's wow.
Yeah, that's a lot of eggs.
Okay, that is a lot.
We also can accommodate dietary needs such as paleo. That's a very popular request these days, as well as vegetarian and gluten-free. Yeah, people are paying attention to those things, and we can accommodate those needs as well.
So how can our listeners get in touch, find you, get on your website?
You can find us at Christophs To Go on Facebook and Twitter and the like, and as well we're on Instagram and Pinterest. All of the whole gamut of social media, we are there at Christophs To Go.
Christophs To Go. Okay, well, thank you. I want to go back to Leslie for a second. Leslie, what's the best part of your job and what's the worst part of your job?
Getting to actually see the payoff, because we work for 11 months out of the year to, collect the books, process them in our warehouse, raise the money to buy the books. And so finally, that month where we're actually giving the books away in the schools is just magical. It's also exhausting, but it's exhilarating. And it's like we have to bottle up all of that fun, that excitement, that joy to sort of get us through the 11 months of the year when we're not actually in the schools giving the books away. And gosh, the worst part of the job, sometimes it's managing the warehouse. We're in a business of giving books away, but we deal with a very heavy, very physical product. And so we have several thousand square feet of warehouse space in Athens that we are just absolutely crammed into, kind of bursting at the seams and trying to manage pallets of books. And we process about 100,000 books each year because we're giving roughly 50,000 away each spring. And so we get all the donated books in. We have to sort the ones that are, good for our program, that we keep for our program, set aside the ones that are going to our book sale. And it's a very, very physical task. And when I was hired in June of 2013, right up until January of this year, I was the only employee of the organization.
Oh.
And so most of that labor had to happen with the work of volunteers. But volunteers are volunteers. They're there doing the work for free and out of the goodness of their hearts. And so sometimes it's hard to find the volunteers who have the strong backs and, who are comfortable lifting boxes of books over and over. Some of the physical aspects of the job are the ones that have kind of kept me up at night.
Okay. And Christoph, what's the best part of your job and what's the worst part of your job?
The best part is to make people happy and help you to create memories when we deliver the food and you are around, and instead you didn't have to stress to find the food and find time and clean and you just enjoy it. That's the best part of my job. And the worst part, it's
when you're not busy.
When I'm not busy. Or I would say all the diet restrictions. Mm-hmm. Because it's true that I totally understand that people have allergies and have need to have restrictions. But in the same time, for us in the kitchen, it's kind of make it a bit harder because we have to remember, instead to cook generally, we have to think about what we're doing. I think that cooking, it's like a good story. I mean, you depends on who said the story. The same story can be said by different people and with other words, and a recipe the same way. I mean, you need to have the recipe as a guideline, but I like to use it as a guideline and nothing else, meaning that I want to cook without thinking.
Okay. And Jessica, what's your favorite dish that Christoph makes since you don't cook?
Well, now that we put that out in the world, it changes every week, to be honest with you. I place my order for my family on Tuesdays, and the new menu for the following week comes out on Wednesday. So I'm always looking at the next menu going, dang, I gotta wait a week. What did I like so much last time? Meatloaf with mashed potatoes. I mean, it's a very simple dish, but you should have seen the smile on my husband's face when he ate it. I mean, seriously. And my daughter, who's 2 years old, who is super finicky about food. She likes, I mean, she even had, I told him, the Kung Pao chicken he made. She ate that and it was crazy spicy, and I wouldn't have offered it to her probably if I didn't have it from him, because I don't make the food, but she'll eat a lot more than I give her credit for.
Okay, well, good to know. Well, thank you for being on the show with us today. And if your business is doing something exciting and you would like to be featured on Business Radio X, reach out to us on the contact page at businessradiox.com. All right, my friends, thank you for listening. I'm Alex Gossett-Shiflett, your hostess with the mostest. And as always, I'm wondering who will be my next guest on Business Radio X.